This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Paul Clements is a professor of political science at Western Michigan University, and he's trying to make the move from studying and writing about public policy to actually making public policy. Clements is the Democratic candidate for Congress in Michigan's 6th District. He's challenging longtime Republican Representative Fred Upton. Paul Clements, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Gordon.
And we're also joined by Yvonne Zipp of the Kalamazoo Gazette.
Thanks so much, Gordon.
Let's begin, Paul, by having you introduce yourself to the audience and give a brief description of your background and why you're running for Congress.
Sure. Well, I've been teaching a national economic development strategies here at Western Michigan University for 18 years. I helped to start our evaluation doctoral program, and I've worked all over the world on improving the efficiency of government and nonprofit programs. My wife is a librarian. Our two daughters went to Kalamazoo Public Schools. My mom, my sister live here. We're very active in our church community, many ways in the community. We really come to love Kalamazoo. It's been a very supportive community for our children. We love West Michigan. And in the 18 years that I've been here, I've noticed that our Congressman Upton, has really changed, that he used to be a moderate. But in the last few years, he's gone along with some of the most extreme elements of our political dialogue. I think we can see that particularly clearly with the Ryan budget that he voted for last month. I hope we have a chance to talk about that. And I think that, you know, the people, I've been campaigning now for over a year, and what I hear more often than anything is Mr. Upton has changed. He's not representing our values here in Southwest Michigan at this time. And I think I can do a better job than he is in promoting the kind of America that we want for our future.
Yvonne?
Paul, on your campaign website, you describe climate change as the biggest problem facing Michigan and the rest of the world. Can you talk a little bit about why you feel that way and what steps you feel need to happen to change things?
Sure. I would certainly say that climate change is the biggest environmental problem facing Michigan. It really seriously threatens our Great Lakes, our agriculture, our tourism. In terms of the overall issues in Michigan, I think jobs and the economy are absolutely fundamental. But yes, climate change is the issue that got me into running this race. Because our congressman, this is one of the issues where I think he's really, you know, frankly sold out. He used to say that we need to take action on climate change. Then he got promoted to chair of House Energy and Commerce Committee, the very committee in Congress that has responsibility for energy policy, which is climate policy. And he did a 180-degree turn. He passed a bill through the House to remove the EPA's authority to regulate greenhouse gases. We're on our way with present policy towards climate chaos, and I really care about that.
Congressman Upton has consistently said that he favors an all-of-the-above strategy for energy. What's wrong with an all-of-the-above strategy, which would include things, for instance, like nuclear power and, you know, perhaps increased drilling for oil?
You know, we've built our current American prosperity on fossil fuels, and that's not a bad thing. But now we've learned that fossil fuels have a byproduct, you know, carbon, that warms the planet, and that if we keep going with our present strategy, it'll be, as I've already mentioned, it'll be hurting our Great Lakes, our agriculture, our tourism, our forests, our wildlife. It's not just here in West Michigan, but around the world, we're going to be needing to transition towards clean energy solutions, largely solar and wind, but also I think we need a gradual transition from other dirty polluting fuels. I don't see the solution in nuclear, but we need to move in a careful, cautious, step-by-step way towards this kind of clean energy future.
Why not nuclear? Because there are some people who have been in the environmental movement for a long time who've kind of come around and said, you know, the greenhouse gas emissions from nuclear are, you know, relatively low compared to other things. Maybe it is not a bad bridge to some sort of a future where things like solar and wind can be a greater part of the energy grid.
You know, the evidence that I've seen so far tells us that nuclear is really just too expensive, that when we've tried to do nuclear power plants, every new plant has gone way over budget, often placing extreme costs on the local taxpayers. We haven't solved the nuclear waste problem. You know, maybe we will find some new technologies with nuclear that will solve these problems, but we don't have those today. So I'm not prepared to put my faith in just hoping for that.
Yvonne?
You mentioned jobs. What are your plans to create the kinds of well-paying middle-class jobs that seem to be evaporating these days?
Sure. You know, I've been teaching national economic development strategies for 18 years. And your question is a big question. I hope we have a chance to get into several aspects of it. But certainly, those industrial countries that have had rapid economic growth have had a strong government working with a strong private sector to build the technologies that will support those manufacturing products that will have increasing demand in the future. And again, clean energy, high-tech manufacturing is, I think, going to continue to be the basis for prosperity. We need to be rebuilding manufacturing in Michigan and around the United States, both in terms of government investment and also in terms of our regulatory environment.
Specifically, what is the government's role in this strong public-private partnership? What does the government actually do? Is it a matter of investing? Is it to sort of identify, you know, there's that phrase, picking winners and losers. Is that part of the government's role?
We need to identify those technologies that will be central to the kinds of manufacturing that are going to have increased demand in the future. And then we need to invest in the science, in the public-private linkages. But we also need, the government needs to be supporting education. We can't succeed in our economic manufacturing future if we don't have a well-educated workforce. That includes, I think, today, making higher education affordable, improving K-12. It involves making everything back to making every child have access to good quality preschool. It also involves the regulatory environment. We need to make sure that our exporters have a level playing field with manufacturers in other countries. And frankly, our government hasn't done a good enough job of that.
Specifically what, through trade policy?
Exactly.
What sort of changes would you want to make on trade policy then? Would you want to, for instance, go back and redo the North American Free Trade Agreement or some of those trade treaties?
You know, I certainly think that that fair trade is part of what we need to be moving towards. But I also think that we want to use our trade policy in ways that are, you know, that are consistent with the treaties that we've entered into, in a way that protects and builds manufacturing within our national territory. For example, if Europe is going to place heavy duties on our exports coming into Europe, then we should have similar duties on their similar exports coming into the United States. If Japan is going to be exporting their cars to the United States, we should be able to export our cars to Japan.
How would you go about, if you had the opportunity, improving the Affordable Care Act or, in general, the healthcare system in the United States?
You know, I certainly agree that we need to be moving towards greater access and lower cost in healthcare. One of the things that, with the Affordable Care Act, that it begins to address the question of access, but it doesn't address the long-term problem of increasing inflation in healthcare costs. And this is actually the biggest driver of America's deficit. There are a lot of ways in which we can get better quality health care, supporting the dignity of the patient, and yet at lower cost. Other countries have done this, we can do it too. And that's certainly an area that I would hope to focus on.
How do you increase access to care and hold down costs, and yet at the same time not diminish the quality of care that people receive now, at least people who are satisfied with the quality of care they receive?
Sure. One thing that the Affordable Care Act does, which I think is really important, is it increases the focus on prevention. Prevention and positive health, and then that reduces healthcare costs down the road. But there are also specific areas, such as post-traumatic care, particularly for elderly people, where the evidence tells us that with better management after someone gets out of the hospital, that we can give the patient greater choice, they can have greater dignity, and we can also reduce costs.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Paul Clements. He is a candidate for Congress in Michigan's 6th Congressional District. He is planning to challenge longtime Republican Representative Fred Upton in November. Also here is Yvonne Zipp of the Kalamazoo Gazette. Yvonne?
speaking of healthcare, obviously in the last couple of weeks, we've heard about veterans not receiving the kind of care that they need. How would you go about addressing that issue?
You know, I have spent the last 20 years working on improving evaluation systems in public and nonprofit organizations. For veterans not to get the care they need to address their health concerns is just unacceptable. Certainly, we need to have, you know, better, I will say, monitoring evaluation systems in our public institutions, such as the VA system. And I am an expert in that.
Do you think Congress is perhaps lacking in the role of being a watchdog? You know, not just in this particular VA case, but during the Bush administration, there were plenty of problems at Walter Reed Hospital that we found out about after, you know, many problems there. Does Congress need to do a better job of being the watchdog that keeps its eye on the administration and making sure that it's evaluating and doing its job correctly?
You know, one of my real disappointments in our Congress and in Congressman Upton is it has become so much more political in the last few years. We've seen with the Affordable Care Act, you know, whatever your opinion on it, to vote to defund it over 40 times when there are serious issues like the VA system and the medical services for our veterans that we need to be focusing on is just, not serving our country. I think our Congress has gone in the wrong direction. It's broken. I think our present congressman is frankly part of that. And we need to get back to focusing on the practical day-to-day problems, solving problems for the American people.
Does that mean that you sitting here as a Democrat running for Congress will say that if it's a Democratic president and there are problems in the administration, I'm going to raise my voice when I find it necessary, regardless of party? Is that what you're saying?
You bet I will. There are plenty of things about, my party. There are plenty of proposals from President Obama, of his programs, that I've disagreed with. And I've spoken against them as a citizen, and I would certainly speak against them as a congressman.
Can you give us an example?
Sure. When the big banks helped to crash our economy in 2008, we had a financial rescue policy. The way that financial rescue policy worked was it was very kind to the big banks that crashed our economy, and it frankly didn't do enough to rebuild jobs for working people. At that time, you and I, the taxpayer, we bailed out the banks because they were too big to fail. Okay, you know, I studied with Ben Bernanke, was my advisor. I know economics. It was right. They were too big to fail. We would have had a worse recession if we hadn't solved that problem. But guess what? A few years later now, we have four banks that again have assets equal to 60% of the U.S. economy, once again too big to fail. They once again have an implicit insurance policy from you and me, the taxpayer, and President Obama has done nothing about that.
Where did you study with Ben? Where was he, your advisor?
At Princeton. I did my graduate work in public affairs at Princeton.
Yvonne?
You mentioned earlier you think that higher education needs to be more affordable. How would you go about doing that?
Well, I think that the major way that the federal government can do that is through low-interest student loans. This is something where my opponent, Mr. Upton, has voted to reduce Pell Grants, which I think is going absolutely in the wrong direction. We give these big banks, we've been giving them loans at 0.25% interest, where our students are often paying 6%, 7%, 8%, 9% interest for their student loans. I teach here at the university. There are so many students who are graduating loaded up with debt, so they can't get their lives started. I think lower interest student loans would be a big part of the solution. If a graduate is going into an area of public service where there just aren't enough people with the qualifications, maybe there should be some kind of loan forgiveness in those circumstances.
You mentioned earlier that you wanted to talk some about the Ryan budget. Give us your assessment. What's wrong with it, and what's an alternative to the Ryan budget that would reduce the deficit and still not restrict the economy too greatly?
Sure. You know, I believe that the best days for America and our democracy lie ahead of us, but that in order to achieve our potential, we need a strong government, a strong middle class The Ryan budget goes exactly in the wrong direction. We've been seeing the increasing gap between the super rich and the middle class and the poor. The Ryan budget, it cuts Medicare, it cuts Medicaid, it reopens that donut hole, it cuts vital education programs and technology programs, investing in the kind of manufacturing that we've already talked about to rebuild our economy. It cuts taxes on millionaires, but it would have to raise taxes on the, on like a family of four, middle, an average family, by about $2,000 to achieve the deficit reduction targets that, that we're looking at. I think that one of the biggest challenges facing our country is that the super rich and big corporations have often been able to tilt the playing field in their favor through their influence on government, through getting big tax loopholes and subsidies, and we can have significant cuts there. We've already discussed that there are ways to make healthcare both more efficient and more effective. I think we certainly need to be doing that.
Would you at any point consider calling for an increase in taxes, income taxes, or anything else to fund what you say is the necessary role of government in growing the economy?
I certainly think that everything needs to be on the table, that when we're looking at solutions to our national problems, that taxes certainly have to be considered as an option.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with congressional candidate Paul Clements. He's also a political science professor at Western Michigan University. He is running in the 6th District, which is currently represented by Republican Fred Upton. Also here is Yvonne Zipp of the Kalamazoo Gazette. Yvonne?
Paul, you're running against, obviously, a longtime veteran, and this is your first political race. How do you feel you're getting your message out, and what are the challenges in going up against someone who has been, you know, representing Southwest Michigan since the 80s?
Yeah, Mr. Upton, he's been there for 28 years, but certainly I've been campaigning now for 16 months, and what I hear time and time again from the voters of this district is that he's changed. There was a poll last year, last October, where he was one of the most vulnerable Republicans in the House of Representatives. One advantage that I have from prior Democrats is before now, the Democrats frankly haven't started early enough and haven't raised the resources to get their message out. And in our politics, you have to do that. In the last decade, the other Democrats haven't started before April of the election year. I started 14 months earlier than that. I've had a chance to speak with many different groups, Rotary clubs, farmers, teachers, Democrats, also Republicans, county fairs, many, many times in each of the 6 counties of the district already. And I'm getting a very good response to my message.
Going back, though, looking at midterm election years, which is what we have here, we're not in a presidential year. In those years, Fred Upton has topped 60% pretty consistently. He was held to 54% by Mike O'Brien in 2012, but President Obama was at the top of the ticket, winning Michigan pretty convincingly. Do you have more of a headwind than Mike O'Brien had 2 years ago as you try to unseat Representative Upton?
Certainly. There's no question about that. Again, I started much earlier in the cycle than he did. My campaign has already dramatically exceeded his total fundraising for his entire campaign. But I think more importantly than that is what I said before, and that is that, you know, Mr. Upton has gradually, but in the last few years, increasingly changed his politics. He's lined up with really extreme elements of our current political discourse, and the voters see that. And that really gives, you know, I think that I can represent a positive vision for the middle class, for our economy, for our environment. And I think that gives me a real opportunity.
You do acknowledge, though, you will be outspent considerably.
You know, in the last decade, Mr. Upton has outspent his opponents 10 or 20 to 1. In the last election, he's one of only 66 people in the House and the Senate who got over half of their contributions from outside their home state. In recent elections, the Democrat hasn't had the time or the money to get their message out. I'm building the kind of campaign where we're going to do that. We will have the resources to get my message out. And I'm confident that, you know, I think that people may very well decide to place their trust in me to represent them.
Do you think you will get money from outside the state? And are you asking for it?
Certainly.
And is it necessary in order to run a competitive campaign that that outside groups do fund you to some extent?
You know, in our American political system, if I'm elected, I'll be elected to the National Congress. I have had contributions from friends from outside the state. I expect that I will, as time goes on, get some contributions from other organizations outside the state. But the overwhelming majority of my contributions have been from individuals within the district, unlike the situation with Mr. Upton.
Are there any groups or people you won't take money from?
You know, I haven't really given that a whole lot of thought. I wouldn't take money from the Koch brothers, but I doubt they would want to give it to me.
Now, Yvonne?
You mentioned a couple other folks on that you wouldn't take money from on the website, and one of them was Entergy, the owners of Palisades.
Sure, sure.
What do you think needs to be done with Palisades?
You know, one of the issues with Mr. Upton is he has systematically undermined the institutions that protect our environment. He's cut the budget of the EPA. He's undermined the capacity of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to impose even normal safety regulations on our nuclear power plants. Entergy is one of the most fragile, most accident-prone nuclear plants in the country. And we need to be confident that it is providing safe, secure nuclear power or is moving towards some kind of a reasoned phase out. We don't see that today, and so I would not be comfortable in accepting. I think that it represents a threat to us today, so I wouldn't be comfortable accepting contributions from the company that owns it.
Let me ask you about a couple of social issues. Do you support legalizing gay marriage?
Yes, I do.
Would you support, say, a federal constitutional amendment?
You know, I think that if it looks as though the national dialogue is moving in that direction. If two people, you know, really love and care for one another, the family has been a fundamental institution in American society. And if that can be recognized in our Constitution, I think that would be a good thing.
Do you support leaving it up to the states, as President Obama has said he would do? Or do you think that the federal government needs to weigh in on this more forcefully than that?
I think that that what we've been seeing in recent years is states moving one by one towards recognizing the importance of people being able to have a family, of supporting the possibility of marriage, even for people, you know, of the same sex. And I think that that's been a good process, and I would support that.
So is the pace of change good enough for you at the state level, or do you think it needs to be helped along, again, at the federal government level?
I think we have a pretty good pace of change right now. I think we're moving pretty rapidly towards it being recognized at the state level, and that's a good thing.
Do you favor any changes in federal laws on marijuana or other drugs?
You know, I teach evaluation, and it's very interesting in the United States right now that, as with gay marriage, with marijuana issues, we see different states trying out different things. I think that that's a really positive development. Let's see what happens in those states that have moved very strongly forward towards legalizing marijuana. Let's look at the health impacts. Let's look at the safety impacts. And if it turns out to be a positive thing, I would certainly support it.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Paul Clements. He is the Democrat running for Congress in Michigan's 6th District, that seat currently held by Republican Representative Fred Upton. Also here is Yvonne Zipp of the Kalamazoo Gazette. Yvonne?
I have a social issue for you. What about, you mentioned universal preschool earlier. What about, do you think the government should have a role in childcare to support families with working moms?
I think that it's really important for women to have the same rights as men in general. Issues like education policy, issues like preschool policy, I think that a lot of the decision-making power needs to be kept local. If there can be some government support so that women can get support with things like preschool, like daycare, that would be certainly something I would want to consider. But the decision-making power in terms of the organization needs to be kept local.
Under what conditions would you vote to authorize the use of force in another country?
Well, that's a big question. I think that the bar for the use of force needs to be for use of military force needs to be very high. I frankly think that our military exercise activities in Iraq seems to have been was based on misinformation, and that really concerns me. I was actually against the invasion of Iraq, and it's turned out that the information that we used for that invasion was substantially mistaken, substantially wrong. Certainly, we need to protect American interests overseas. We need to defend Americans, but. I think we need to move more towards diplomacy, more towards working collectively with other governments on common problems, and only go to force as a very last resort.
Is this an area where Congress has ceded too much power to the administration? And in other words, that the administration can make the call rather easily to go into foreign countries using some sort of force without congressional authorization?
Yes, I do. I think that we should bring back the balance of powers there back towards the Congress, because you know this is the American people, this is the representatives of the American people, and they should have a say in these important, critically important national decisions.
How do you do that? How do you get more of the power back to Congress so that the president at least feels compelled to come to the elected body when wanting to launch some sort of military strike?
Well, after 9/11, as I'm sure you remember, there were laws put in place that were to address the specific security threats we faced after 9/11. I think that to a large extent, you know, we've done a pretty good job in addressing that, and we should let those laws go.
We're down here to just a couple minutes left, so I want to ask you about something which is on your website. You say that Congressman Upton has become part of the problem and that he has shown that he will not work across the aisle with Democrats or has trouble working across the aisle with Democrats. If Representative Upton were here, he would surely dispute that and cite some things where he has worked on in a bipartisan way. But that aside, I think most people would agree that very few congressmen work across the aisle anymore. It's hard to find some concrete examples. So if you are elected to Congress, how do you go about changing what has become a very polarized institution?
You know, the American people across the country see that our Congress is broken. I don't want to promise that one new congressperson can change everything, but I will do everything in my power to work with Republicans, to work with Democrats, to work with whoever I can on the practical issues, the problems we face to rebuild the middle class, to rebuild manufacturing, to strengthen our country. And that's perhaps the best I can say.
Would you agree, though, that Congress is generally that way? It's very polarized right now, very partisan. Certainly Representative Upton, to the extent that he has not worked across the aisle, is hardly atypical.
Representative Upton has been a leader in pushing his party towards extreme policies, such as the Ryan budget, that increase the gap, that increase the collapse of the middle class, that increase the gap between the rich and the poor. I don't think we can consider him to be just an innocent bystander in this process.
Why do you say he's been a leader in that?
Well, he's chair of one of the most powerful committees in the House of Representatives.
Paul Clements, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Gordon.
Paul Clements is a candidate for Congress in Michigan's 6th Congressional District, running for the seat currently held by Republican Fred Upton. He's also a professor of political science at Western Michigan University. And thanks again to Yvonne Zipp of the Kalamazoo Gazette.
Thanks so much, Gordon.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.